Good afternoon. You're listening to Valley Public Radio. Mezzo-soprano Kelly O'Connor has received international acclaim, performing with the world's premier orchestras and conductors, premiering exciting new works, and breathing new life into familiar favorites. But while she's been a familiar visitor to the most famous concert halls in the world, this weekend she takes the stage in her hometown for the first time as a major star of the classical music world when she performs in concert with the Fresno Philharmonic at the William Saroyan Theater. Kelly O'Connor, welcome to Valley Public Radio today.
Thank you so much.
It must be very exciting to perform with your hometown orchestra for the first time. You've actually called this area home for a long time, despite traveling around the world and performing with these great ensembles. What was it like putting this concert together with Maestro Theodore Kuchar?
Well, I love it because it's true. I have been here for a long time. I did go to school and come back, but my home has always been here. And Ted, I think, has been here for around 10 years or so. And he said to me, we had coffee when we first met, and he said, how is it that no one knows you live here? Do you just walk around and no one knows that you have a Grammy in your house? I said, no, no one knows. It's not. I like it that way. It's nice, you know, and it's always just been home. So it's nice to come home and not have to worry about that. And I visit all these great, huge cities and exciting places. So I really like to come home to a place I know and where my family and friends are.
Your career really took off in 2003 when you were selected to be at the lead in a wonderful production, which has since garnered a Grammy Award and acclaim for you and so many others based on the life of the famed poet Garcia Lorca. But before we get to that, I want to talk about that. How do you go from a Clovis High School student, Mickey Cox Elementary School student here? And I should note in the interest of disclosure that Kelly and I did go to high school together. We were 2 years apart, but small world. How do you go from Clovis High in the choir here in Central California to being selected to premiere a work at Tanglewood that then catapults you to stardom in the classical music world? There has to be quite the story there.
Well, it was amazing. You know, I went to USC for my undergraduate, and I went for music, but I really didn't know what I was going to do with that degree. I just knew that I was passionate about music, and I loved doing it, and it was what I was good at. So I went there, and I was in the choir all 4 years, and I loved it. I thought maybe I'd be a professional choral singer or something, just because the group dynamic really worked for me, and I loved it, and that's less stress as well. And then I decided to audition for Tanglewood. And, you know, I didn't know that the odds were that great for me getting in there, but I thought, what the heck, you know, you never know, and you should audition for everything. So I'm really glad I did. And Osvaldo, luckily, he heard my tape and he said, I like this voice and she looks like Garcia Lorca, which is maybe not a compliment because he is a man. And he always tells me it was my eyebrows. To this day, he's very angry with me that I now manicure my eyebrows. But so luckily he chose me for that. And, you know, they had no music. He had not composed anything to date at that time. So they just had they had me vocalize on a tape and he chose me. So I got very lucky. All the stars aligned. And when I went to Tanglewood, my agent's parents go there every summer. So they heard me at a masterclass and they said, our son's an agent. And he was an agent at a big agency. And that's how I met even him. So everything kind of fell into place from there. And, you know, in college, I really didn't have that much experience in the opera world. I was really in choir. So it just goes to show you never know what door is going to open.
Was that intimidating for you to not have that experience in the opera world and then jump headfirst into having a major composer writing a work around you? And you've since had this happen recently with John Adams and the other Mary.
Yes, it's like my preparation for that. But, you know, Osvaldo was telling people, because he did get that question a lot, because, you know, the other person in Ina Damar was Don Upshaw. And that's a little intimidating as well. But he always told people, I don't think she knows any better. And so I think there was something to the fact that I didn't know, you know, I mean, if I find my notes from the phone call I got from Tanglewood, how I spelled his name, how I spelled I had no idea who he was. There was, you know, I just didn't know the world I was entering. And I think there was something good about that for me.
Did you have any idea how it would change your life?
No. I don't think you can predict that, especially with modern music, because it's hit or miss. There have been pieces that I've sung that have kind of lived and died on that one performance, you know. So you don't know what the response is going to be, if the piece is going to live. And I've been so blessed to have these these pieces of my life that have just continued. And I've done Ina Damar, I think, you know, 13 or 14 different times in different cities. And also the Neruda songs. I think this might be my 10th or 11th time singing them.
How do you keep it fresh? How do you keep it interesting and still fulfilling? Obviously, the work is incredible, but is it a challenge? And how have you changed in, you know, this is almost a decade since you premiered that piece at Tanglewood. How has that role changed you, and how have you changed in the role?
Well, that's what I think is beautiful, is that I actually have the opportunity to do it at different times in my life, because I'm so different. Like, maybe 10 years ago, I was much more like the young Lorca, and now I'm like the older Lorca, because I know a lot more. And, you know, it just enhances what you do, all the life experience you get. And that's and where you're at the moment. I feel like that happens with Neruda songs, because, you know, I didn't really know Peter when I started doing them. And then I had this beautiful relationship with him. And then he passed on, the composer. And, you know, once that happened, it changed the whole piece again for me, because he wasn't there. You know, so many dynamics change the piece that you're singing, because you're just involved in the moment, and everything that's going on in your life affects it.
If you just joined us on Valley Public Radio today, we're talking with Grammy Award-winning mezzo-soprano Kelly O'Connor, a Clovis native, a Clovis High graduate, and performing this weekend with the Fresno Philharmonic. Two of the pieces that you're most known for, both are tied to famous poets, Pablo Neruda and Garcia Lorca. Were you familiar with their work before singing the?
No, and I did not speak Spanish. Isn't that amazing that I think in high school I took French, and then I really focused on French, and I thought, you know, this is operatic. I will sing Carmen somewhere, and I will learn French. And then, of course, I don't speak Spanish. I sing in Spanish pretty much 90% of the time. And I don't, you know, it's just amazing that was the influence. But those are great poets to be in the company of. I mean, I think Neruda, it doesn't even need music. It is so poetic. You know, it's meant to be, it sounds like it's sung. The language is just so rich and amazing. So those pieces are really, I think he just did a really great job setting the text. And he doesn't speak Spanish either. So that's an incredible, incredible accomplishment, I think.
Fascinating. Now let's talk about Neruda songs. Peter Lieberson wrote that piece for his late wife. She performed it, I think, only three times before her death. What was it like to step into that space?
Again, yes, that's a very daunting experience. You know, and I hadn't met Peter before when I got the engagement, and it was about 3 months before I was supposed to do them, and he hadn't heard me. I hadn't met him. And I reached out to him and I said, do you want to hear me sing these? Even though I know he had only heard Lorraine, and that's kind of, it was hard for him as well. You know, it's a transitional time. And so he said to me, I feel like being in warm weather and I'm going to be in Hawaii. So why don't you come there and we'll sing the pieces? And that's what we did. So every day we sang one of the songs, and he played the piano, and he's not a pianist, and he had a keyboard. It was kind of just all around an amazing experience, you know, and every night we'd have these talks about Lorraine, and I learned so much about them. So it was a really good passing of the torch type of thing for him, too. I think it was helpful for the healing, and then he passed it on to me. I mean, it was just such a beautiful thing.
Is there a certain fearlessness that's required doing things like this?
I think so. You know, I mean, I remember that first time that I did sing them. It was in Chicago, and Peter was there, and my agent was there, and that was my first time with High Tink conducting, and, you know, Chicago Symphony. I mean, it was a little frightening, you know, I know I'm meant to sing those pieces. They just speak to me, and that rarely happens, and when it does, I just know. So whatever's going to be is going to be, and I was meant to do it. So there's some sort of freedom in that.
I mentioned it earlier, another piece that you just premiered in May, I believe it was, by the great composer John Adams, the Gospel According to the Other Mary, premiered at Disney Hall with L.A. Phil. What was it like, this the process, going through that work, working with such an acclaimed composer, and shaping that premiere?
Yeah, that was an amazing experience as well, because I have done a lot of new music, but I haven't gotten to actually work with the composer one-on-one with creating the role, you know, and I got to have a lot of input into the music, and it was just, it was an amazing experience because I really feel like he's the Mozart of our time. I mean, he's a genius. There's, you know, I also love El Nino. I think that's my favorite piece of his, my favorite piece of all time, actually. And so just meeting him and working with him, it has been an amazing experience. And the fact that we did it kind of, I mean, even though it was performed in front of people, it was like a workshop, I would say. You know, because we're going back and we're going to do them again, and we're going to stage it with Peter Sellers directing. And so it's just, it's an incredible, again, an incredible experience, you know. And I was in Madrid doing Ina de Mar again this summer with Peter, and he just said, what a great year you have. You know, this is an amazing time in your life, and you have to really just appreciate it. And it is, it's amazing for me.
Do you see a piece develop differently when you're there from the start than you might with the, something you come to, such as Neruda songs or something else like that?
Yes, I totally. And I, you know, that was what was amazing for me with creating that piece, because even though there's only one record really of Neruda and it's Lorraine, I still had Lorraine in my head when I first approached learning the piece, and I couldn't really get her out. You know, I mean, I tried to really have my own nuance and my own thing, and it has evolved, but you heard that first in your head, so it's hard to release that. And when you create something brand new, there's nothing in there, so you get to build everything. And I think that was that's the most exciting thing, because it's yours, and you just, you know. And it the same thing happened with Ina de Mar, because I was the first one to sing it, and I really, it's so funny if I hear someone sing the aria from it and they do what I do, because it says improvised vowels, but I'm the one that they've heard do it, so they do what I do. And I just think, oh my gosh, I'm kind of the historical, you know, fact of this piece. I mean, that's incredibly amazing. And I don't understand why more people don't want to do that all the time. I would do it all the time if I could.
In one of the videos on your website, you talked about knowing yourself as an artist, as a musician, as being a very important part to your success or to anyone's success. Can you elaborate on that a little more and tell our listeners what you mean when you're and what and who you are as an artist, as a mezzo-soprano, and how have you discovered your artistic?
Well, I think I've been so lucky to work with some of the best people in the business from the beginning. You know, I mean, I was guided well as, you know, early on as well with all of my choral directors that all encouraged me to keep doing this and be patient and wait for my voice to fill in, because it did take time. And it was hard to not have it be complete. You know, it's still figuring itself out, but it'll get there. You know, and so I think from the beginning, having all of those amazing people, like Bob Spano was the first conductor I worked with out of college, and that's just amazing, you know, and he's really been a great connection for me. And so I think that all these people have just asked me to be open and honest and sincere from the beginning. So I didn't know anything else. And that's beautiful, you know, because I just want to give, and I want to communicate, and I want to have a conversation with the audience. And that's the most important. And that's why I really love doing the concert work, because I don't have a character. I don't have a costume. I don't have anything to preoccupy me without, you know, besides, I just want to tell you this story. I want to tell you what I'm singing about. And it's so beautiful. It's the best. It's fulfilling for everyone involved, I think. And so I'm just really lucky that I found this way to do this. You know, it's kind of a unique way, and not maybe the way that everyone thinks one's career should go, but I just found the right way for me, I think.
You also have the opportunity to work with a number of great artists, both performers and conductors and so many others. Another one who is a great rising star in the world of classical music, another young icon, is Gustavo Dudamel. What's he like? I have to ask.
He's younger than me. He's younger than me, which is already disturbing to me. But no, he's great. He is just amazing. You know, I actually had the privilege to sing in Bogota with his orchestra, and we did Mahler too, and that is phenomenal. I mean, all of those musicians have been playing that piece since they were 2 years old. They all have it memorized, and that's Mahler too. That's not an easy thing. I mean, I know he memorizes everything. That's his thing. But that's impressive, and they just play with this abandonment that I think he still is trying to encompass. You know, just having the freedom of and joy in the music. I mean, you can see it in him, and it's not just the hair, but it does get bigger, I have to say. It starts out very wet in the beginning. You know, but that's what he's trying to do. And he really, you know, in the new piece, that's daunting for anybody. He was so busy. He had so many things going on. I think they did Don Giovanni the week before. And, you know, and he just, there were so many cooks in the kitchen. There's John Adams, there's Peter Sellers, and he was just cool and calm and collected and just, you know, really tried to help us because there's already a lot of opinions going on there. And he knew what he should do to help. And I think, you know, he really tries to do that and with a really kind spirit and very fun. He's very fun, I guarantee that.
You just joined us on Valley Public Radio. Mezzo-soprano Kelly O'Connor joins us in the studio today. She's performing this weekend with the Fresno Philharmonic, performing at the William Saroyan Theater Saturday and Sunday. She'll be performing Neruda songs. I've been talking about that also, a piece by Defaya. But before we go on with that, I want to go back in your career, looking back at it now, looking back at your early life here in Clovis and in Fresno, now that you're this internationally famous classical music star. Do you see anything early on that – obviously you had a love for music and for singing and in the voice, but was there anything early on that really was pivotal in directing you on the path that you are now?
Well, I think what's interesting is that my mom always says my kindergarten teacher said I could sing, so it's been a long time. But I really feel that what I was given here was the encouragement that was needed, you know, and – Every teacher I encountered in the choral world in this town just encouraged me to keep going. I mean, I never encountered that I couldn't do it. It was always, I mean, you're always going to do this. This is just what I did. When I was at Mickey Cox with Valerie Quirin, I also did the Central California Children's Choir with her for years too. So, I mean, every choral thing that I could do. And then, you know, I went to Clark and I went to Clovis High, and then I did one show at Roger Rocca's with Dan Pisano directing, and that was great too because that taught me things. I mean, that's six shows a week, and you're in high school. That's very demanding, and it's going to let you know if you're really passionate enough about it to continue. It's not easy, you know, and especially at that time, that's not easy to do all of that. And I just think I just got so much encouragement. I never thought I couldn't do it. And it's, you know, even if I wasn't maybe the person that got all the leads in every musical or got every solo, I just knew I was going to do it. And that never faltered for me. And I think that's so priceless because in this world, when you get in the real world, you encounter a lot of negativity and you really can. So I don't think I even knew about it before I got there. And that's really a beautiful thing. I think it's rare. I think it's very rare.
How do you develop the ability to deal with that negativity? Has that been a challenge?
It is a challenge. I mean, I think, you know, you have to realize that you can only control your reaction and your feelings, you know, because there have been times where I will be on stage and I'll think, why am I nervous right now? I don't even know at this moment right now. Maybe I'm singing 2 minutes of something and I'm more nervous than I do when I, you know, sing a world premiere or something. There's so many factors that go into why your mind is in the place it is. And you can't always, you know, you have to just learn to channel it. And that's even what I was telling the kids at Clovis High yesterday. It's so great. They're all in choir and they're, you know, when the minute they get up to sing by themselves, it's a whole different world. And it's, you know, the nerves come in. And I just said, everyone, you just have to, you know, channel the energy. It's okay. Everyone gets nervous. You have to just let it be. It has to just occur. And it's a natural thing. But it is hard. And you know, you just have to have faith that you're doing what you're meant to do. And if you're not, if you don't have the passion and it's not, you don't love it as much as, you know, you possibly can, then maybe, you know, you should consider what you're doing just because you have to still love it. You can tell when people don't love it. I think you need to have that love of it.
You made the trip, as you mentioned, back to Clovis High and to Clark Intermediate School to do an assembly or of some sort with those students. What was that like? Did it bring back some interesting memories or remind you of yourself?
I know it does. It does. And, you know, it's so much smaller than I remembered. But it's incredible to see, you know, just to see these eager kids. And I think especially at the Clark level, they were so eager to answer questions and to stand up and be, you know, very independent. And it was great because at that age, they're just, they don't know. Again, they just, you know, they don't have these inhibitions that maybe you get a little bit in high school. And I really wanted to reach out to any kids that I could and say, you know, there's not one way. And I was here and I didn't do everything. It's not like I was the star pupil of Clovis High School or something. You know, I mean, I had my own trials and tribulations, and I was a choir nerd, you know, and I mean, I tell them all, and they would come up to me and just say, I'm so glad that you said that, because sometimes I feel like I don't know if I should do this because I'm not the one that gets the solo, or I'm not the one that, I mean, it was just great. Anybody that I can touch in that way and say, hey, I was that girl too, you know, and look at me now. So you never know. You never know.
I neglected to ask you about the Grammy Award.
That's okay.
What was that like?
It was incredible. It was incredible, actually. I mean, I think a lot of people don't realize that the classical Grammys are in the morning. A lot of people don't go. So they really just rush through it. They're going really fast. And
it looks the same when it's on your bookshelf, though, doesn't it?
That's the thing. Exactly. I still shine it the same way. And, you know, and my friend and I decided to go, Jessica Rivera, who was also nominated. And because we thought, hey, we're not going to win. It's a modern opera. We'll just go to the Grammys. How cool is this? So we went, and it's about the fourth award in, and they call out Ina DeMar. There's no way we even believe this is happening. And you have to jump up immediately. I mean, we are waving our arms and saying, we're here. Don't go on. So we went to, you know, we went up, we gave the speech, we did all the press. It was an incredible day. So I'm so glad that I had that whole experience with it as well. And I do have to say that when it did get shipped to Clovis, California, it was left on my porch, no signature required, which I think is an interesting and a problematic thing that maybe needs to change. But I thought, why is my Grammy on the porch? I think it's not good.
We'll have to talk to Naris about that, see if they can change their policies. Speaking of your porch in Clovis, what's life like for you, international touring star? You're still based in Central California, but you're on the road quite a bit. Mm-hmm. In fact, you're going on the road right now after this Fresno concert, and home is a lot of exotic locales, I take it.
Yes, home is, you know, where my luggage is at the moment. But I did buy a house here 2 years ago, and I lived here. I travel probably 8 or 9 months out of the year, so it is a lot, but it is a kind of a packing ground for me. And a place, you know, I just wanted a place to have all of my things too, because it is hard to be on the road and have your life be in your suitcase, you know. And I always just try to make anywhere that I go my home. I bring certain things if I need, you know, I need them, and it makes me feel more comfortable. But I just, you know, this is home, and I just felt like I could buy a house and I could have all this space, and it's great that I have this opportunity. And my poor neighbors, I try to sing after 10, you know, but I did have a couple of them come up to me and say, are you the girl that sings? And I thought, you know, I'm in my house and I don't even realize that I'm singing high A's and B's, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, they can actually hear me. This is I didn't even know, I wasn't aware of it. So my neighbors probably get a concert, you know, every couple months.
Family is also very important for you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Your mom has been a very instrumental part of your formative years, and to this day, talk about what she's meant to you as a performing artist today.
Well, it's great, because I don't really come from a musical family. There might be some sort of crooning or singers back in there somewhere, but no one that we really know about in depth. So I think that the fact that she just was willing to support this, you know, this full-heartedly from the beginning. I mean, my first voice teacher was my elementary school choral conductor. So it's been a long time coming. And, you know, we tried all the other things like tap dancing and gymnastics, but I'm very not coordinated. So, you know, we had to go into the music, and she supported me with piano and, you know, helped me. It's not a cheap endeavor, and a lot of parents would be disheartened by that and say, oh, I don't want to spend all this money, and who knows if you're even going to make money in this career, because music doesn't seem like a profitable thing to most parents. So I'm so glad that she supported me the whole time and was, you know, she's my biggest fan, I think. And she's so happy I'm singing in Fresno. She is so happy. I think she's more happy than anyone. So I'm really glad.
I was just going to ask you about that. What do you think it's going to be like taking the stage in your hometown, really for the first time in doing what you do?
I know. I said to her today, I said, I'm actually kind of nervous about it because, you know, I mean, it's different when you sing to a bunch of strangers. And I know that might not make sense, but I don't know them, you know, and I don't feel kind of a need to prove anything to them or, you know, and it's not, I don't want to say that I have to prove something, but, you know, I just want to say, hey, yeah, it turned out pretty well, right? You know, you all thought it might have potential, but I mean, even when I sing for Mr. Lanford back at Clovis High, he doesn't, I mean, my voice is so, you know, so much more refined and bigger than, I mean, the kids just go, what is going on? You know, because in opera too, we don't use the microphone and that's, so it's going to be, it's a much bigger sound than they would expect to come out of me. And, so it is a little daunting, but I'm glad. That's why, you know, I spoke with Ted and I really wanted to do the Neruda songs because they're my, you know, they're my piece and I just feel like I can do them justice. So it's my comfort zone so that I can hopefully be able to just, you know, spread the message.
What's next for you? You're going on tour in the fall into the next year.
Actually, next week I go to Washington, D.C. to do the Neruda songs. So another week of Neruda, which I don't mind. Then I'm going to Boston. I'm singing Suzuki, my first Suzuki, Madame Butterfly. So that's I know I'm actually doing opera. It's like it's a a miracle. But
is it difficult to shift from new music to something
very
traditional?
It is. It's so interesting, you know, because I sing so much of that when I just went back to listening to Puccini, I thought, wow, this is, people live in this area, you know, because it's so beautiful. And it's just, that's what it's meant to be. It's meant to be beautiful. The storyline, not so, it's not the, you know, but the music just pulls on your heart. It's so stunning. And it's nice to just get to sing that, you know, and not have to worry about the rhythms or pitches because it's kind of just more organic in that way. It's not as cerebral as I feel like, you know, the newer music, it uses all of my capacity sometimes. So it's going to be nice, but Suzuki's actually a little challenging because she's, you know, the servant to Madame Butterfly. And so I basically have to know everyone's part because I have to be serving tea and cigars and numerous other things. And that's basically, she has so much to do. And I thought, okay, so I have to learn a whole opera. It's actually not, you know, the 5 minutes of music Suzuki has. So it's a little daunting. And then I do a Beethoven 9 in Cincinnati and I come home for Thanksgiving. So I'm gone for this long time, this little break.
It's a little bit unusual to for someone in your position, perhaps, to be so well known for new music and then also the traditional repertoire. Mm-hmm. Is it a concern, perhaps, maybe more of your agents than yours? Because in media, whether it's in music or anything else, and media, I'm talking about radio here, we're all guilty of pigeonholing people and pigeonholing what they do and what they're good at. Do you have to worry about, or is that even on your radar, being pigeonholed into, well, Kelly, she does new music?
I think those go together already. I think I am there. So I think, you know, I mean, and I don't mind it at all because I will, it's such a great experience. I would do it all the time, but it's nice to challenge yourself in different ways. And I know I do so much concert work that my agent sometimes is worried that I travel too much. And, you know, it's nice if I do an opera, I'm in Boston for 5 weeks, which I don't even know what to do with myself. I'm used to coming in. I've got, you know, I went to Madrid last week. I had an hour of rehearsal and that's it. And we did one concert. I'm used to it. That's how I work. So going somewhere and doing 3.5 weeks of rehearsal is just, it's kind of a foreign thing for me. But it's good to balance it because I think it also, again, just enhances everything that I can learn about my art. You know, I mean, I say I'm an opera singer, but I sing a lot of concert work. You know what I mean? I'm kind of more of a classical singer. So it's good for me to do both, I think.
Well, we certainly look forward to hearing all of that and more, and we'll be able to hear it this weekend at the William Saroyan Theater in Fresno as mezzo-soprano and Grammy Award winner Kelly O'Connor takes to the stage in her hometown for the first time, performing with the Fresno Philharmonic. She'll be performing Neruda songs, also The Three-Cornered Hat by Defaya, and it'll be a warm homecoming, I'm sure. Again, that's this Saturday and Sunday. Kelly O'Connor, thank you so much for joining us on Valley Public Radio.
Thank you.